Welcome back to the Fasting Well podcast. So you may have noticed there have been some scary headlines recently about the sweetener called erythritol, suggesting it might cause heart attacks and other heart problems, as well as about the ketogenic diet and heart problems. So I'm going to address both of those things, like the research that was done and the news reporting of it. So in both cases, I'm going to cover what did they actually do? What did they actually look at in the research? What conclusions can we draw from it? Should you change your behavior as a result? And then kind of in both cases, I'm also going to apply something. There's this thing, this list called the seven deadly sins of churnalism. And churnalism is a word that comes from churn and journalism, right? They're churning out nutrition headlines. And so these are both really good examples of churnalism, and I'll explain why. I'm going to list off the seven deadly sins of churnalism as enumerated by a couple researchers that I'm familiar with. So Vinay Prasad and Adam Sifu, they have a blog post about this on their Substack called Sensible Medicine. And so I'm going to talk about that. And overall, I think you should not only be able to learn more about the ketogenic diet and heart disease and erythritol and heart disease and kind of what the potential connection or, you know, is there a connection? What would it be if there is? But also kind of how to look at research in general, a little bit better idea of like, well, if there's some crazy headline, if I'm worried about it, how should I kind of look at this research and what are some of the questions I should be asking? So hopefully that's helpful. So we'll get into it in just a second. And in both cases, I'm taking this audio from a video that I made. So it'll mostly sound just like a podcast, except I might refer to a video a couple times throughout each of them. And by the way, you've probably noticed that I don't really run any ads on this podcast, so it's basically just a free resource. But of course, I'm taking my time to put it out and everything. So if you want to support the show, you can go to fastingwell.com/give, G-I-V-E, fastingwell.com/give, if you want to make a one-time donation or a recurring donation. And anything you can give would be appreciated if you think it's, if you can find it in your heart or if you think it's worth it to you. So, all right, without any further ado, let's go ahead and get into the two segments. And we'll start with the one about erythritol. And so that's about the first half of this episode, and then we'll get into the ketogenic diet and heart disease question, which is about the second half, and I've got some timestamps on the show notes. So erythritol is a really common sweetener in a lot of, you know, processed products, as well as sweetener packets. And there's been some recent news, some recent headlines saying erythritol might increase your risk of heart attacks and heart problems, you know, cardiovascular problems. And so, of course, a lot of people are like, oh no, I need to throw out all my erythritol and never eat it again, basically. But what's actually going on with this research? What did they actually do? How reliable is it? And ultimately, The big question in your mind is, should you stop consuming erythritol? What are the kind of the risks and the benefits of doing that versus continuing to use it? So that's what I'm going to break down in this video, and I'll go through the research, and I'll go through also some kind of big picture things to think about when you're looking at research like this. So what did they actually do in this research that they're citing in these various news reports? Well, the interesting thing is what they didn't do. What they didn't do was they didn't give erythritol to people and then see if they had an increased risk of heart attacks. Nope, not even close. What they did do was they just looked at some data of like, okay, here's some people that had like heart attacks or strokes or whatever, cardiovascular problems. And let's check their blood for a bunch of different things and see if certain things are high. And maybe those high things will tell us something. And they found that these people that are having these heart problems and stuff had high levels of erythritol in their blood. Isn't that interesting? Well, here's the little known fact. And even though I've taken a bunch of biochemistry classes over the years, I didn't even remember this because it doesn't come up very often in, you know, in anything really. But it came up now. And the little known fact is that your body actually makes erythritol through this pathway, this, you know, part of your metabolism, you know, metabolic pathway called the pentose phosphate pathway. So like most things, it probably happens in your liver, maybe other places, so this pentose phosphate pathway revs up when there's a lot of glucose around. What's glucose? Sugar. How do you get a lot of glucose in your body? Eat lots of sugar and carbs. So guess what? People that eat a lot of sugar and carbs are going to end up revving up that pathway and having a lot of erythritol in their blood. And so they said, oh, these people had heart attacks and they have high levels of erythritol. We better be worried about that the erythritol is causing these heart attacks. What they didn't say, you know, what they haven't emphasized in the reporting of this research is that the body makes erythritol and it could simply all be coming from there. So despite all those, you know, limitations and kind of the weird conclusions that were maybe being drawn at that point, what they did next is they said, okay, there's this association, right, with the high erythritol and the heart attacks and stuff. So let's look at a couple other related things, possibly related things. And so they took 8 humans, possibly related to some recent research with 8 mice, I don't know. But they took these 8 humans and they gave them erythritol to eat, and then they checked their blood and said that they had elevated levels of erythritol in their blood. No surprise there, you know, because you absorb some of the erythritol that you eat into your bloodstream. But then the other thing that they did was they took some blood in a basically like a test tube or a petri dish, and they added erythritol to it. So imagine some putting your blood in a petri dish, dumping a little packet of erythritol on it, and then they found that the platelets were more reactive when they did that in vitro, meaning outside the body. And then they put together these 3 things. There's this association, which might have nothing to do with eating erythritol, as I explained. Then there's the fact that if you eat erythritol, your erythritol level does increase. And then the idea that outside of the body, there's an increased platelet reactivity when you add erythritol. So if you stitch those 3 things together, you can maybe come up with this kind of Frankenstein of a research paper to say erythritol might increase your risk of heart attacks. But is that actually reliable? Is that something you should actually hang your hat on? Should you actually change your behavior as a result of that? So it's maybe worth mentioning that you think, you know, these researchers that did this, they probably know that this is very low quality research and it's not reliable. So why did they leak it to the press? Well, I don't know for sure, but there are a few possibilities, right? Maybe they have some kind of preconceived bias against erythritol. And so maybe once they found like possible evidence of harm, they're like, okay, let's leak this. Or maybe they just wanted to be famous, you know, because you get famous if you do research that's all over the news. Or maybe they actually had good motivations at heart. I don't know. I don't know any of the people involved. But you got to think about human nature. Like, why would you do that if you were in that situation? But the result is all these scary headlines. And regardless of what their motivation is, a lot of people are now afraid of erythritol. So it's worth noting that there was some other research out there before about erythritol, and some of it shows the opposite of what these people are saying. For example, there's a study that's probably a little bit more compelling than this one that showed improved blood flow, better blood flow in people who consumed erythritol. Actually, they studied both rats and humans, and they gave them erythritol and then looked at their blood flow, and they had better blood flow. Well, guess what? That's a little bit more of a real-world, real-life study. It was a pretty small sample. I think it was like 24 people or something. But it's actually more realistic that that might actually be telling us something important because they gave erythritol to people and then looked at what happened. Because in this other research, they really didn't do that at all other than saying, oh, their erythritol level goes up in the bloodstream. That's the only thing they did that's in the real-world, kind of real-life, showing what was going on. So kind of the overall takeaway from this research, what did we actually learn? What should you do as a result? Well, the reality is it doesn't tell us much. It really doesn't tell us anything. I mean, it tells you some little bits of data, but it doesn't tell you whether erythritol is actually harmful in your body, because things that happen in a petri dish don't necessarily apply to the human body. In many cases, there's countless examples of things where they can show it in a test tube, but it doesn't apply when you actually put it inside the body. And so, you know, should you actually stop using erythritol or what, you know, how harmful is it, et cetera, et cetera? Well, if you're using erythritol in a way that allows you to replace sugar and other harmful foods, then you're probably getting a net benefit, right? Even if there is some theoretical harm to erythritol, which there may not be any, it might just be nonsense. Now, are you better off not using sweeteners at all? Probably. But that's easier said than done, right? If you have kind of a sugar addiction, for example, sometimes people find it helpful to replace it with something, at least for a while, as a bridge. And so probably the net benefit of doing that is definitely worth it, even if you're consuming something that has a bunch of scary headlines like this. So an interesting comparison is cholesterol. So back in the day, like the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, some researchers and scientists and government officials decided that, well, it looks like cholesterol seems to be harmful in the body, so we better tell people not to eat cholesterol because then it might cause harm in the body. But eventually it was shown that there's really no connection between the cholesterol you eat and any harmful effects of cholesterol in your body. And even to this day, though, a lot of people still think they need to limit how much cholesterol they eat. So that was an example where they were using very low quality kind of research connections or what have you, and just kind of hypotheses and all this stuff, and came up with a conclusion and a recommendation which has persisted for decades, even though it's nonsense. And so with this erythritol, will that turn out to be something similar? Very possibly. I don't know. I mean, more research is needed to show if there's an actual connection, but like high quality randomized controlled trials is what you would want to do. Prospective research where you're like giving somebody erythritol and seeing what happens, kind of like that small study I talked about where it actually showed improved blood flow. And so overall, the impact of these headlines is probably more harmful than helpful is kind of my takeaway, because people are going to be throwing out their erythritol with the bathwater. In other words, you know, they're throwing it all out, but what are they going to replace it with? Now, if you're just not going to use any sweeteners, okay, fine. But if you're going to replace it with sugar at any point in time, then it's probably a net harm, a net decrement. So one other thing I wanted to mention was, I've mentioned this in another video recently, but there's seven deadly sins of churnalism. What's churnalism, and where does this all come from? So there's a blog post from a Substack called Sensible Medicine, which has some different researchers and people who are really good at analyzing research. And they came up with these seven deadly sins of churnalism, meaning when, you know, newspapers and stuff churn out nutrition headlines like eggs will kill you, eggs will save you, coffee will kill you, coffee will save you, blueberries cure cancer, all these different things, right? You see all these headlines that are based on low quality research, and then, you know, they're just trying to get clicks. And so that's what churnalism is. And this clearly falls into churnalism, by the way. And I'm going to go through the seven deadly sins of churnalism and show how they apply here briefly. So the first one is observational studies almost never prove causation. So this was not only an observational study with the first part of it where they were just looking at the blood levels of things. They weren't even looking at the actual question they were trying to answer. They didn't give people erythritol and then see what happened. They just looked at the blood of people who were having heart attacks. So it was even worse than observational research. Extrapolation and generalization. So of course they're kind of extrapolating not from the test tube to the human body. They're generalizing from those eight people that they gave it to the whole human population in terms of like the blood levels. And then, you know, a bunch of other extrapolations. Number three is ignoring confounding, selection bias, and other epidemiological errors. So there's this huge elephant in the room, this huge confounder, which is the erythritol that they were measuring in the first part of the research was probably just from that pentose phosphate pathway and not erythritol that people ate. Very, 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 very likely that that's the vast majority of what they were finding in the bloodstream. So that was the big fat confounder that they were ignoring, and then there are others as well. The fourth deadly sin of churnalism is neglecting plausibility. So how plausible is it that the erythritol is the cause of these heart attacks? Not very plausible. And that's because, you know, they're looking at these people when they have the heart attack, let's look at their blood. And it's, like I said, very likely it's simply coming from their own metabolism that erythritol is produced in their body. And so it's much more likely that that's where the bulk of that is coming from, as opposed to that they all ate a bunch of erythritol before their blood was tested. So, I mean, is it conceivable? Yeah, but it's a very low probability that that's really what's going on. Disclaim and pivot. If you read any of these news articles, you'll probably see a disclaimer or several disclaimers, but then they'll pivot back to the topic. They'll say like, oh, well, this is observational research and a test tube and it can't really show that that's really what's happening in the body. But don't forget, you know, erythritol may be harmful. And of course, if you just read the headline, you don't see any of those disclaimers, right? And then sin number six is keep testing, report just once. So a bunch of different research has been done on erythritol. Not a lot of high quality research, but several different things. But they're just reporting the one that's very inflammatory and sensational to try to get your attention. And then number seven, being incurious. In other words, not being curious. So that's the final deadly sin of churnalism. So if you're not curious, what do I mean by that? Well, when you look at this kind of observational research and say like, oh, they noticed a connection between erythritol and heart attacks and cardiovascular problems. Well, does that mean the erythritol caused the heart attacks? Maybe, But what else could be going on? What else could be going on? And that's where they're not being very curious. They're not really diving into that. And the most obvious, glaring answer is it's probably just because they were eating a lot of sugar and carbs and it increased the erythritol production in their body. That's the seems like the most probable conclusion to draw from the research, actually. So don't eat so much sugar and so many carbs, basically, would be kind of my takeaway based on that. So what am I going to do as a result of this new research? Very low quality. Nothing. I'm literally not going to make any change to my behavior other than making this video as a result of this research, because it doesn't really tell me anything except that it was kind of interesting to review the pentose phosphate pathway and to remember that, you know, your body actually makes erythritol. And I'm like, huh, that's kind of weird. But otherwise, I don't really see any reason to change my behavior. Now, am I consuming a lot of erythritol on a daily basis? No, but I do from time to time if I have some sort of like low carb dessert thing, but which is not an everyday occurrence, but sometimes. And I wouldn't really be worried about that. I don't think like, oh no, now I'm going to have a heart attack. Because it's very, very unlikely that there's a strong connection between those things. And there are much more harmful things that I could be doing, like eating a sugary dessert. I would wager a lot of money that the sugary dessert is a lot more harmful than the erythritol sweetened dessert. So that's kind of the takeaway there. So those are my thoughts. So will keto give you a heart attack? That's what everybody wants to know. So recently there were a bunch of headlines. There was some a research paper, I guess. It's not peer reviewed, but some sort of preprint or something that came out. And then as a result, there was a bunch of scary headlines that say, actually, I've got one of them right here. One version of it, it says keto-like diet may be associated with a higher risk of heart disease, according to new research. So I looked around online and there's a bunch of other news outlets, in addition to this one was CNN, that have covered that same story. So obviously, if you're doing a ketogenic diet or you thought about doing a ketogenic diet, then you're wondering like, uh-oh, is this going to give me a heart attack? So very scary headlines, obviously. So that's why in this video, I'm going to talk about what's really going on here. What do we know? What do we not know? And I'll break it down. So I'll talk about the details of the research and what it actually kind of means and put it in a broader context and also kind of see where it fits in with something called Chernalism, and I'll explain what that is and how this kind of relates to that, and ultimately answer the question, if you're on keto, should you stop, and should you never start in the first place as a result of this recent headline? So what did they actually do in this research? Well, I'm not going to get into all the fine details, but just kind of a high-level description, a kind of overview. So basically, they did dietary questionnaires. They asked people, like, are you following this low-carb, high-fat diet? So people self-reported as doing a low-carb, high-fat diet. And then they observed that, and I'm looking at my outline periodically here, so that's why I'm looking to the left, but they observed that some of those people that said they were doing that had higher levels of LDL cholesterol. And then in like the news articles and stuff, they're like, they have higher LDL, and therefore, they have higher risk of heart disease. So do you notice anything wrong so far? So there's about a million things already, just in what I've said already, that are kind of issues with this research and with the reporting of this research. But let's get into a few of them one at a time. So for example, if you have higher LDL levels, does that mean you have an increased risk of heart disease? And the answer is no. That's been thoroughly debunked. So a lot of people still believe that, but just having higher LDL levels does not mean you have a higher risk of heart disease. You have to look at more details, such as the number of particles and the type of particles and so on and so forth, and it depends a lot on the context. So they've made that leap in a lot of this reporting of that research that is kind of just nonsense to begin with. And another thing is that in this, well, I should get back to the most fundamental thing, which is that these are dietary questionnaires, and people are saying, oh yeah, I was doing a low-carb, high-fat diet. How reliable are dietary questionnaires? Well, I can't give you an actual answer to that question, but they're not reliable. That's the bottom line. So anytime any research that's based on like asking people, like, what did you eat a month ago? What did you eat 6 months ago? Do you remember what you ate yesterday? You have to think about it for a minute, right? So I certainly couldn't tell you what I ate a month ago with much accuracy. So any dietary questionnaires, basically you throw it out. So that's maybe the most fundamental thing. And then another fundamental thing is this is just kind of observational research, which you just can't ever really rely on. Now, and I'm going to get into that a little bit more later in the video. But in terms of, so one other thing that's like really, really big with this is when you read the article. So like I was looking through the article on CNN, for example, they said that these people, the people that they studied, the people that they were reporting on, were actually eating about 45% of their calories from fat. So if you know anything about the ketogenic diet, you know that 45% is not the amount of fat that you would normally be eating. Typically, the recommendations are somewhere between 70% and 90%, depending on what sources you go to do a so-called ketogenic diet. So these people weren't really even doing a ketogenic diet. And that's probably why the headline called it a keto-like diet. Keto-like diet. Interesting. Wonder what that is exactly. I guess it's like a wishy-washy keto diet where you're not really doing the keto diet. So this, you know, this study, this research hasn't been peer reviewed. It's just kind of, I don't know if it's technically a preprint or what it is, but it's just some sort of early release, you know, where they kind of leak it to the news and those sorts of things. So one other thing, and I'm kind of reading from my notes here, is they noted that the people that they were looking at had an increased intake of saturated fat. And so then they kind of go on to kind of talk about the saturated fat being a risk factor for heart disease. I'll actually read you a sentence from the study right here, which is kind of interesting, if I can scroll all the way to the bottom. So it says, eating lots of foods high in saturated fat increases the body's production of LDL cholesterol, which can build up inside the arteries and restrict blood flow to the heart and brain. So that's the last sentence in that CNN version of the news report. And that sentence reveals, well, it's a big oversimplification, and it shows that they're still living in the 1990s or the 1980s, because the idea that just eating saturated fat causes heart disease has been thoroughly debunked. Now, many people don't know that yet. Most journalists seem to not have a clue about that, but I'll link to a review article that kind of covers that in great depth if you want to dive into that topic. But so those are a lot of the potential issues with this study. Now I mentioned something called churnalism earlier. Churnalism is a weird word, right? It's the combination of journalism and churn, like you're churning out headlines. And so it kind of describes what happens when journalists latch on to any new report, any new observational research usually, and then come up with some headline like coffee will cure cancer, or coffee will cause cancer, or red meat is terrible, or red meat is good, or eggs are good, or eggs are bad, right? You've seen a million versions of eggs are good or eggs are bad. And that's because they're looking at unreliable observational research and coming up with some sort of headline. So they can always kind of find a way to skew it one way or the other when they're just kind of observing unreliable food questionnaires and that sort of thing, and depending on how you analyze the data. So speaking of churnalism, I want to reference it's like a blog post about churnalism on this Substack called Sensible Medicine. Churnalism 2, just meaning the number 2, like their second post about journalism. And it goes over the 7 deadly sins of journalism. So I'm going to briefly just cover these 7 deadly sins and how it applies to this research. And of course, I can't go in depth on this, but I'll just give you a quick hitter on this. So the first sin is observational studies almost never prove causation. So this was observational research, can't prove that there's a cause. So it should always be basically ignored if you're in terms of like, oh, I should change my behavior based on this observational study. For the most part, should be ignored. But it's usually just like a jumping off point to do like better and more research to like see what the actual connections are, what the actual causes are. But if you're like, you know, like every headline that you see, you're going to change your behavior, then you're just going to be doing a 180 every other week, right? The second deadly sin is extrapolation and generalization. So it's like if you find some group of people and then you want to extrapolate it to everybody. So that of course applies to this because they were looking at people in the UK, I think. And so they didn't probably have very many of certain ethnic groups like Asians or African American or whatever. It would just be like one example. But also they're doing this keto-like diet. So it's not actually a ketogenic diet. It's a keto-like diet where they're like have half as much fat as a normal keto diet. And then they're extrapolating that to say the ketogenic diet might be causing heart disease, right? So that's another version of that sin. The third deadly sin is ignoring confounding, selection bias, and other epidemiological errors. So there's a bunch of potential confounding factors here, like the fact that these people aren't even doing a ketogenic diet, like the fact that they're self-reporting, et cetera, et cetera. Selection bias, who knows? I didn't look into the details enough to know how they selected the people or whatever. I guess it's just some database where they're kind of looking at people that had said certain things on questionnaires, but you can tell me in the comments if I'm not right about that. The fourth deadly sin is neglecting plausibility. Is it plausible that it's the ketogenic diet that's causing the heart disease? Well, it depends on your perspective whether that seems plausible at first glance. Obviously, if you ascribe to this outdated theory that saturated fat and high LDL is what's going to cause heart disease, then you would think like, oh, I should be really worried about that. And that's kind of what most people thought in the 1960s, 1970s, 1980s, and kind of into the 90s. But then it's since turned around in the last 20 years. There's a lot of research that's debunked all that. But people still hold on to the old way of looking at things. So that affects how plausible you think this is. Sin number five, and this is a big one for this study, is disclaim and pivot. So disclaim and pivot. So I'm going to show you an example in this study where they do that. So in other words, whenever they say like, oh, there's a bunch of limitations, can't really conclude anything from this, but you might want to quit your keto diet or something. So for example, it says here, the researchers said in the release that their study can only show an association between the diet and an increased risk for major cardiac events, not a causal relationship, because it was an observational study, but their findings are worth further study, blah, blah, blah. And then they go on to say the study's limitations include measurement errors and occur when with dietary questionnaires, basically, is what they're saying. So in other words, they put a bunch of disclaimers in there, but the disclaimers aren't in the headline. It's like, it's only if you read the article, and most people just look at the headline and don't even read the article, right? So the disclaimers say, you can't actually say this is causing anything, but it's just a connection we sort of saw when we looked at this unreliable data, basically. So you always see that disclaim and then pivot back to like, but you might want to take this seriously, even though it can't actually show you causation. Number six is keep testing, report just once. So of course there's been tons and tons and tons and tons of research about ketogenic diets, but they're just reporting on this one low quality study. Sin number seven, the final sin, is not being curious, being incurious. And what that basically means is not looking at what's actually going on here. So just going with the like, oh, keto seems to be causing heart disease. But rather than asking the question, is that actually what we're seeing here? Or is there maybe some other connection? You know, for example, maybe these people doing this keto-like diet, which is not really a ketogenic diet, maybe there's some other reason, like maybe they're also eating high sugar at the same time. It's entirely plausible because it's just a so-called keto-like diet, and maybe they don't have much insight into what they're really eating since they're not really following the ketogenic diet. So, I mean, and so that's just a possibility. So those are the seven deadly sins of journalism and how all of them actually apply to varying degrees to this particular study. So one other point I wanted to make about this this research and the reporting of this research is that it's clearly a hit piece on keto. Like the people obviously have an agenda, and here's how you can tell. When you read the reporting, you see that they're quoting someone who wasn't even involved in the research saying negative things about the ketogenic diet. So that person obviously has some, you know, preconceived biases and such. So for example, in the third paragraph of this CNN article, it says, this study provides an important contribution to the scientific literature and suggests the harms outweigh the benefits, said Christopher Gardner, a research professor of medicine, blah, blah, blah. Gardner was not involved in the study. Elevated LDL cholesterol should not be dismissed as simply a negligible side effect of the very low carb diet or ketogenic diet, Gardner said. And remember, they weren't even doing a very low carb diet. That's simply not what they were looking at. They were looking at like a medium carb diet, probably. So the fact they were quoting this guy that wasn't involved, who I have been told is like, you know, a big time antagonist of ketogenic diet, ketogenic research kind of thing, shows that it's basically a hit piece. And also the fact that it's crappy research and then they have these sensational headlines. So what should your takeaways be? What should your actual takeaways be from this? Basically, it's garbage. You can just throw it away. You can just stomp all over it and just ignore it. And that's true with most nutrition headlines because they're journalism. You know, they're just crap that they come up with to be like, oh, here's some low quality data that might be sensational and somebody might click on it. And so this is in a long line of such journalism. So There's actually a ton of research out there showing a bunch of different health benefits from an actual ketogenic diet, not a keto-like diet. But from an actual ketogenic diet, tons and tons and tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of benefits there are. That's amazing for your brain, amazing for your heart, actually. There's some research showing some interesting connections with heart health and heart function. And I'll link to a couple things, like maybe a repository of some of those research studies that you can look at. Now, if you're somebody with prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, which includes about half the people in the U.S. probably, if you fall into one of those buckets, it should be very, very obvious. I mean, it's obvious to me, let's put it that way. But if you kind of look at the research, look at the data out there, it should be very obvious. And if you understand the physiology, it should be very obvious that the benefits of doing a low-carb, high-fat, ketogenic diet far outweigh the risks of doing that. Why? Because if you have prediabetes or diabetes, your main problem is high blood sugar and high insulin. Those are going to kill you. Those are going to kill you. And what do those cause? Heart attacks. Doesn't it seem a little ironic that we're worried about the ketogenic diet causing heart attacks when we know that diabetes causes heart attacks? And we know that is very, very, a very powerful, risk factor for heart attacks and such. So the benefits clearly outweigh the risks because a ketogenic diet can fix your diabetes. It can put it in remission. So if that's the case, your overall risk for heart attacks is clearly going to be much lower, much, much lower. Not a little bit lower, but a lot lower if you're able to put diabetes in remission. Now, if you're using keto in a more popular sense, like, oh, just doing a crash diet or something, then, you know, that's different because you don't give your body time to adapt. And, you know, maybe you're not using it to actually treat a health condition. You're just trying to lose weight. And then, you know, so that's more of a mixed bag in terms of what kind of health benefits you're going to get from doing that. So you need to kind of give your body time to adapt. So hopefully that was helpful, covered a lot of different things, a lot of different issues with the research and the reporting of that research. All right, guys, so that wraps up the audio from each of those two videos about erythritol and the ketogenic diet. And as I said at the beginning, if you want to support the show, since I'm not running any ads, at least not at the moment, you can go to fastingwell.com/give, G-I-V-E. So again, that's fastingwell.com/give, and that'll redirect you to a page where you can make a one-time donation or a recurring donation. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll see you next time on the Fasting Well podcast. The Fasting Well podcast is not medical advice and does not replace the need to consult with your own medical providers.